Not going to be in a theater. It's going to be here. So don't listen to that. It's going to be here. But I'm just praying for that weekend to just be a spiritually helpful weekend to us all. This is a wonderful film, a challenging film, and one that just in my life has been extremely challenging and extremely encouraging as well in regards to thinking on following Jesus and what it means to follow Jesus. Parents, we absolutely want you to come. We will have a kid-friendly, kid-appropriate movie for all the kiddos, so please come on out and plan to be here. We've invited some other area churches, just letting them know that we're doing it and inviting them as well. So February 6th, I hope you've had it on your calendar. I've mentioned it many times, and look forward to that evening together. So, all right, very good. Well, I want to invite you to take a look at the screen with me as we have been journeying through the book of Ephesians. I know we haven't the last 2 weeks with my absence, but we're going to get back into it today. And so what we do is we read one scripture aloud. I've chosen this scripture as kind of our theme for the second half of Ephesians. So would you read this with me? I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. That's Ephesians 4, 1 through 3. Well, I've got to tell you, there's something that has shown up in my home lately that I was not expecting. If you know Robin and I, you know that we have four young kids, and we are experiencing what I call the dress wars in our home. And why I say it's surprising is I didn't think the dress wars happened until teenage years. And here I am, we have little kids, first grade and third grade and two preschoolers, yet we have the dress wars in our home. And I see some of you are like, what is the dress wars? Well, I think you've probably all experienced it, so once I explain it, you'll probably get what I'm talking about. The dress wars is when you're getting your family ready and y'all are getting ready to head out the door, and then mom looks at one of the children and says, I guess you haven't gotten dressed yet. Because I know you're not going looking like that, right? What happened to the clothes that I laid out for you? And as soon as I hear that conversation happen, I know what my role is. Get the other three kids out into the van, take a book with me, because it might take a little while, right? Get the music playing, get the kids settled, and then at some point, Robin and the unknown child, if you know her, you know who I'm talking about, but we'll finally emerge from the house with some sort of conglomeration of compromise, which happened with the dress wars. Like I said, parents, help me out. I thought this was a teenage problem, but it's already here. And I tell you that story because in our passage today, Paul's going to talk about the main question really is, what are you wearing? What are you wearing? Because you see, as followers of Jesus, the Bible tells us that we have this old way of thinking and this old way of living that's just so natural to us apart from God. It's like we just wear them as clothes. But now, as you know Jesus, as Jesus saves your soul, he gives you these new clothes, these new attitudes, these new ways of living that you begin to wear, that you have to put on. Because know this, when Jesus saves your life, he creates a radical change of your heart. And it's a change that you experience at the moment of salvation, but it's also one that you continue to grow into. And so just like Robin sometimes has to look at our kids and says, no, you got to go change your clothes. It's like God in this passage is saying, remember what you used to wear, but now that you know me, now that you're following me, there's some things you need to change. You need to change your clothes. And so let's explore the passage together. This is Ephesians chapter 4. Don't know if I led you there earlier, but Ephesians chapter 4. We've made it to Ephesians 4, starting in verse 17. Let's read the word of the Lord together. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. But verse 20, but that is not the way you learned Christ, assuming that you've heard about him and were taught in him as the truth is in Jesus, to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. The first thing that the passage asks us to do today is to change into your new self. Change into your new self. Up until this point in Ephesians, Paul's used that word Gentile to speak of any person who is not ethnically Jewish. And he used that term to show us that now that Christ has come, the gospel is for everyone, both Jew and Gentile. But now Paul switches the term, and he uses the term Gentile here to refer to all people who don't have a relationship with Jesus at all. And he says, you who are followers of Jesus must no longer walk in the futility of your minds like those who don't know Jesus. God is saying, that word futility there, it means useless. So God is saying that those who don't know and follow Jesus think and live in a way that is completely useless. Well, way to be offensive right up front, Paul. How can Paul possibly say that? Well, we've already seen in Ephesians that God created all things for his glory. So God is the very reason that all things exist and have their being. And that means that all men and women have been created in the image of God to know him, to find their satisfaction in him, to pursue them. Relationship with God and worship of God was supposed to be the foundation of all of our lives. That's why we were created. Yet the Bible tells us that men rebelled against God and did what he said was evil. Because man wanted their own way. They wanted to choose right and wrong for themselves instead of having an authority telling them what right and wrong should be. We see this every day and all the time. So now, apart from being saved by Jesus, Ephesians tells us that we're spiritually dead because of our rebellion against God, which makes sense, right? If we're separated from our very life source because of our sin, it makes sense that we are spiritually dead. Our souls are dead. So everything from the way that we naturally think and the way that we naturally spend our lives is actually futile and useless apart from our Creator God. That's what Paul's telling us. And there's nothing like thinking about the fact that no matter how you're spending your life, and no matter what you're accomplishing in life, and no matter what you're running toward, there is coming a day where you will die and stand before God, your Creator and your Lord. There's nothing like embracing that truth to realize and understand why anything that you do in life apart from God is really useless. It's going to end up eternally meaningless. It's like the successful businessman who didn't come to Jesus until the end of his life. And then at the end of the life, he said, you know, I spent my whole life climbing the ladder of success, only to find that that ladder was leaning up against the wrong building. And when we live separated from God, Paul says that we're darkened in our understanding. We're alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in us, and that we have this hardness of heart, he says. You see, if the whole world was created by God and for God, how in the world can we truly understand who we are or what we're here to do apart from our Creator? Of course, on our own, our understanding is completely darkened. Think about it. The Bible's saying that apart from Jesus, it's like you were born in a room that's completely dark. And you live out your entire life seeking and feeling in a dark room to find something to hang on to, whether that be power or control or comfort or approval of others. And depending on your personality or your upbringing or your culture that you live in, it's going to be different things that you place meaning in. And every culture kind of creates its own rules, and every family kind of creates its own rules, because we need that stability even in the midst of this dark room where we can't see anything else. And we teach those things to our children so that they can have something to cling on to as well. Yet Paul says, apart from the Creator God, we all do this in complete darkness for what we were truly created for. Have you ever thought about your life and thought, I don't feel like this is what I was created for? Well, listen, if your life is not centered on who God is and what He's done for you, then you're not living as you were created to live. And Paul says this happens not because God has not revealed Himself to us. He says it happens because of our hardness of heart. It's incredible to read the first chapter of Romans, where Paul says everything that you need to know about God, everything you need to know about that there's one God who's created all things and has all power and actually has the right to tell us what is right and wrong, is actually extremely clear, even if you've never come in contact with the Bible. What that means is that any sane, rational person who's born in this world could walk around and look at nature and look at everything that's on display and look at the beautiful design and look at how all of our bodies work and function, and the natural conclusion has to be that there's something greater than us that has greater power, greater knowledge, that designed all this. And Paul says it's only in the futility, the uselessness, the foolishness of our darkened minds that we would look and experience what God has created and come to any other conclusion. Paul says, man, it takes a hardness of heart to come to insane kinds of conclusions that maybe this all just happened. Or insane kind of conclusions that maybe I'm God and maybe the world really exists for me. And maybe I should just live for myself and my desires. Paul says those are actually insane ways of thinking. But let me be honest with you. Even as a believer in Jesus, we all have parts that we struggle with. Areas that God says this way about, and we struggle to submit to that way. I do. We all do. Whether it be in the area of sexual ethics or the roles of men and women or the command to love your enemies or anything, so many things in the Bible. I've heard it said that the Bible is an equal opportunity offender. Just read it long enough and it's going to offend something that you believe. So I know you're thinking, well, that explains a lot about my spouse and about their insanity, right? But you should be thinking, well, that explains a lot about me, because we've all got some crazy in us, all right? So can we just all admit today that we've all got some crazy in us? We've all got some things that we see, but we don't really see. I heard it said, we see, but we don't really see because we don't want to see. Because we're in darkness, we have this hardness of heart. And that insanity comes from this hardness of heart, this callousness. Think about a callus on the skin. I never played the guitar myself, but knew a lot of guys who did. And when they first started playing the guitar, it's usually when you go to college because you want to impress the girls, right? So when they start playing the guitar, those first few weeks, those fingers really hurt, right? Because they haven't developed those calluses yet. But the more they rub on those strings and play, guitar players get these calluses to where they can play for hours and not even feel a thing, because this callus, right? It's the way that it formed on the skin. And in the same way, Paul is saying, the longer a person lives any aspect of their life not submitted to God and His love and His truth, the more and more callous towards God and callous towards truth we become in our hearts. Things that seem so right and good and meaningful, we buck against, because we have this callousness of heart, because we're rebels against God. And God says the destructive reality of continue to live that way is, do you realize the more you become callous, the more and more you need that very thing that's brought the callous upon you in the first place. That's why Paul says, that's why people give themselves over to sensuality and become greedy for all kinds of impurity. Which makes sense, right? If in our ignorance we believe life is about us, and then life gets hard, and so all we know to do is medicate ourselves from this hard life because life is about us. And so we give ourselves to drugs, or we give ourselves to sex, or we give ourselves to bad relationships, or we give ourselves to habits that we know we shouldn't. And one of the main problems is, as that callous forms, do you notice the thing that felt so good the first time, the thing that quelled the anxiety so good the first time, you need more of it the second time? Realize no sin is just neutral. Because the more and more you go into something and you trust it and you need it for your life, the farther and farther you have to go. Never thought something like that was going to affect anyone else, but then it got to the point that it was out of control. Because when we live in callousness of heart, sin turns from something that we're controlling to something that's controlling us. And as you run to it again and again, you've got to go a little deeper and a little darker. Isn't that the case in the form of a drug, of a relationship, of anything? Because that's that callous forming on the heart. That you no longer see things the way they should be seen. But you need something more. You need something else. Listen, if life is difficult in a sin-stained world, which it is, then our hearts become more cynical and more callous as things surprise us and don't go our way. And we're shown time and time again that we are not Lord of our own lives. And I wonder if that's you today. Whether you claim to be a Christian or not, are you living like your life is mainly about you? When you do that, you only pursue other people for what's in it for you. And you chase after things like career or relationships or approval of others or your next hit or your guilty pleasure time and time again, hoping that it will satisfy, but it never does. And all the while, you're becoming more and more callous. It's why Paul says in the next verse that the old self is corrupt and full of deceit. What that means is it never really fulfills its promises. Whatever it is that you're trusting in, whatever it is that you believe, life would just not be worth it if I didn't have this anymore. That's that thing that has control of your heart and is creating a callous in your heart. And the sad reality is so many people live their whole life in cycles of calloused hearts and unmet, unrealistic expectations. And then they stand before God horrifyingly offended when God says, life is all about me and this whole thing centered around me and you rebelled against me, so you will live apart from me for eternity. That's the picture of a life of a created being who's lived in rejection of its creator. And don't just pass this point off thinking that you have your sin and your rebellion under control. Because this is what happens to a callous. You become unfeeling to the point where you take it more and more. So it's like you're holding a match. And a lot of us think we're just holding this little match. But what Satan does is, while you're holding this match that's lit, he can throw gas and gasoline on you at any moment, and it destroys your entire life. That's why when you hear about someone's life destroyed, you know that it didn't happen in a day. It was these little decisions and these little compromises along the way. It was just someone holding that match. But then it all falls apart in a day because Satan just blows that gasoline on it. Take the example from others. I mean, do you not have someone in your life that you've seen this? What makes you so different? What makes me so different? They went a lot farther and a lot darker than you could have ever imagined. How many times have you ever said this? I never imagined so-and-so could have done that. I promise you, sin takes you a lot farther than you want to go, to the point where it's controlling you and you don't even feel it until life falls apart. And I believe that we all in here have to be mindful of this, because we all have these calluses that can form on our hearts. Listen, God says as followers of Jesus, by his grace, he can remove those calluses and give you a renewed heart and mind. That's the hope. But he says he will only do that, assuming that you've heard about him, Paul says. Assuming that you've been taught in him as the truth is in Jesus. You see, the language Paul uses here is very unique, because when we use the word learn, we're usually talking about learning something. I learned mathematics. I learned at my job. It's not usually learning someone. But here Paul uses it for learning someone. He says, that is not the way you learned Christ. Paul speaks of this intimate relational experience with Jesus that gives you the grace to change. I know you once lived with callous hearts, with you as the center of the universe, but then you learned Christ. You spent time with Jesus. You watched Jesus walk. You watched him pray. You watched him love. You watched him give. You watched him heal. You watched him teach. You watched him live with no callousness of heart and in love towards God and others. You experienced him forgive your sins and adopt you into his family and consider you more significant than himself, even though you were his enemy. He died for you even when you were in your sin, and he rose again to defeat your sin and your callousness, though you had done nothing to deserve it. And listen, when you learn Jesus like that, you don't just learn some true facts, but you experience the truth of God in a person, assuming that that's the Jesus that you know. Because if Jesus is just a set of facts or a cultural norm or just a get out of hell free card, you've not truly learned Christ. But the invitation is that you can today. Because Jesus, when he saw us in all of our rebellion and all of our callous hearts, Jesus came fully God and fully man. And he lived a perfect life of loving God and loving others. And he died the death we were condemned to die in our place, just like he was the calloused rebel, so that we might be forgiven and freed, so that God might take our heart of stone and give us a heart of flesh. If we would turn to him and say, God, you're right and I'm wrong, and you love me enough to take my place. That's what conversion is. That God takes you out of the center of your life and he places himself and what he did for you in the cross and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So in your life and in your relationships and your attitudes, what are you wearing? Are you wearing a callousness, a rebellion centered on self? Or are you putting on the new self in the likeness of God, Paul says, of righteousness and holiness, loving God and loving others before yourself? Are you finding soul satisfaction in your life, even when things don't go your way? Or is your life more revolved around your power, your control, your comfort, or the approval you can receive from others? That's really the question. By the grace of God and the power of the gospel, you can change into your new self. And what Paul does now is he takes a turn from like that philosophical conceptual idea to make it very practical. What he's going to do is he's going to diagnose calloused hearts and show us how the gospel can move us to a softened heart of loving God and loving others. And we're actually going to just look at the first diagnosis today, and then we'll continue on with the rest next Sunday morning. So more to come. But today, I want to ask you, would you just use the rest of this message to allow the Holy Spirit to be your heart surgeon and diagnose some calluses in order for God's grace to soften your heart? and heal some places in your heart and your life, because I believe this first one is an epidemic in our culture, in our families, and even in our church. So here's the first one, the only one we'll look at today, the only other point today, Ephesians 4:25. Therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. The point is that we must change the way we relate. Change the way you relate. The first diagnosis of a callous heart is relating with others in a false way or projecting a false self towards others. It's where your inner person, who you truly are, what you truly think and feel, is not the same person that you project to others, whether that be others in church or others in your family or others in your workplace or anyone. Projecting a false self, not the real you. He says, put away falseness and speak the truth with your neighbor. Here's some questions to help you diagnose this heart callus. Do you always tend in conversation to embellish on your strengths and your accomplishments and kind of leave out any kind of failures or weaknesses in your life? Do you overcompliment and flatter others regarding their strengths and accomplishments in order to seek their approval? Here's one that's hard for me. Are you the same person no matter who you are with? Because I find that with some people, I'm very comfortable being myself and sharing my real thoughts and my opinions and my feelings. Yet with other people, I find myself saying whatever I think they would want to hear. It's like I have this false projection of who they want me to be, and I'm living that out so that they will approve of me and so that they will accept me. Why do I do that? Because in my heart in that moment, I'm valuing that person's thoughts and opinions of me more than I'm valuing God's thoughts and opinions of me and who He's created me to be. I mean, think about when you're in a dating relationship, how difficult it is to actually be real, be your real self, right? It's so tempting to not project your real self, but to project whatever you believe the person you're dating is looking for, right? I mean, have you ever heard a girl say, oh, he's just so thoughtful. He's such a gentleman. His apartment was so clean and orderly the two times I've been there. He's even happy to talk to my mother on our dates. And it's easy to keep that image up, right, when we do not live in the same house and we're not around each other 24/7. Yet if you continually live out this false self, listen, if you continually live out that kind of false self with others, think about it. Even if you do receive their love and approval, your heart will become more and more callous as you realize, wow, that's not me that they're truly loving and approving of. Maybe if they knew the real me, they wouldn't love and approve of me like that. And our hearts harden to the point where sometimes some people can even lose and forget who they are, who they were meant to be in God, because they're so controlled by all these other people in their life because they're living this falsehood, this projection of self. And don't just blow this off, because I believe it's epidemic, right? I mean, and some of it's not our fault. It is our culture to walk by someone and ask, hey, how are you doing? Well, if I was going to be honest with you in that answer, we're going to need a little more time than what our walk by allows, right? But the problem is we can live our whole lives like that. And I know it's true, because I've experienced already in my little time in ministry so far, it's that family that comes in every week, and the spouses sit close to one another, and they're always bragging on their kids' accomplishments, and they're kind of that family that everyone else looks up to in the church and kind of wishes they could have it as put together as they did. And then one Sunday, they don't show up. And the next Sunday, they don't show up. And when you follow up with them, you realize that dad was addicted to porn the whole time, and he's now leaving the family, and they're not going to come back to church at all. And there's really nothing the church can do about it because they were never honest enough with anyone to get any help. Listen, guys, that happens all the time. Why does that happen? Because we say that we're a community of believers and we want to walk with one another, yet so many of us never speak the truth with our neighbors. We just project what we think everyone else wants. And a lot of us are so insecure that we'd rather have it that way. Sometimes I'd rather someone put up their false front and act like I'm the center of their universe, even though I know I'm not. Why? God says to his church, we must put away this callous falsehood and start speaking the truth to one another, for we're members of one another. You know, the most literal translation of the verse says, put away the lie and let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor. So what's the lie? Well, the lie is that life is about me and that my true gods are things like power, control, comfort, and approval. Those are kind of the four gods, the four foundational gods. When you talk to biblical counselors and they look throughout the Bible, they say these are the four things. We all kind of struggle with them in different ways. Usually some of us struggle more with some than others. But if you're not worshiping God, what you're seeking is power, control, comfort, and approval. And that understanding gets to the heart of why we lie to one another, right? Because if my desire is for power, then I must relate with you in a way that exerts my authority and intimidates you. If my desire is for control, then I must manipulate you through guilt or other manipulation tactics in order to get you to be who I need you to be. If my desire is for comfort, then you too easily agree with others and go along with their way, even when you feel and think differently than them. And if your desire is for approval, then you bend to be and do whatever it is you believe that person desires you to be and do. And listen, it's only the gospel of Jesus Christ that sets us free from this kind of trap, that sets our hearts free from these kind of calluses to actually be who God has created us to be and actually speak the truth with one another and truly be members of one another. Because think about it, it's only in the gospel that your full, true self is laid bare in front of your Creator. He knows absolutely everything about you, and you cannot be false towards Him because He knows anyways. Yet He still loved you enough to send His Son to die to defeat all your sins and all your deceitful desires, and to forgive you and give you a new life and to free you. To not have to be motivated by power or control or comfort or approval any longer, but in the gospel you can truly be freed to be who God created you to be, to have the motivation to truly love God and love others. Because realize this, as long as you need power or you need control or you need comfort or you need approval from someone, you cannot truly love them. Think about that. As long as I need you to love me, as long as I need you to love my sermons, as long as I need you to agree with me, as long as I need you to respect me, then I have to project whatever image I believe it will take to receive those things from you. But if I'm so convinced of God's great love and acceptance of me, that He knows me fully 100% and that He loves and accepts me 100%, then I get all those things from Him and I don't need those things from you. And because I don't need those things from you, I'm free to love you even if you don't give me those things. You know, in marriage counseling, we hear a lot about this idea of a love tank or a love cup. And what we have to do in marriage is we have to fill the other person's tank, right, by doing certain things. But biblical counselors have looked at that and asked the question, well, what do they do if they're not filling their tank, right? A divorce? It's not the biblical route. What is it? So maybe we have the foundation wrong. Maybe we're not these love cups that need to be filled up by one another in marriage. Maybe what we are is worshipers who are supposed to get all those things from God Himself so that we can love the other even when they're not filling our tank. Because they were never meant to be and do that. Only God was. Listen, the temptation as a pastor is for me to project that I'm strong, that I have it together, that I always have my kids under control, that my marriage is always a delight. Even the temptation this week is, Dad passed away, but I'm going to only present the hope of heaven and that I'm so thankful to God, and just not present the side that we just got blindsided. I feel like I'm walking around in a fog. I'm eating too much. I am hurting. And I know in my heart of hearts that that false projection is not what you need, and that's not even what you're asking of me. But Satan gets in there and he gives you those false expectations on yourself. You want to know the secret to even loving your enemies well? The secret to loving your enemies is that you don't need your enemies to like you or agree with you or to speak well of you or even treat you well. Would it be more comfortable? Yes. But no matter what, you already have the complete love, acceptance, and approval from the God of the universe who created you, saved you, and is going to keep you forever. Listen, our hearts are so calloused by our deceitful desires for power, control, comfort, and approval. And they've led us to produce something false to one another. Yet you have the perfect acceptance, love, and approval of the God of the universe, who's the only one who ultimately matters. But listen, in order to get you there, you must allow God's grace and love to remove the callous on your heart that got you into that false projection in the first place that maybe you've been managing for so long. I'll tell you one story and we're done. When Robin and I went to the mission field, I began struggling. I struggled because the more and more we got into missionary training, the more and more I felt, I'm not sure if I'm tooled for this. The more and more I saw that you needed to kind of be this entrepreneurial, have this entrepreneurial drive and start something out of nothing, I kind of started seeing, you know, that's not me. And it also required, obviously, the ability to assimilate into a completely different culture. And so it required a level of health, a level of rest, a level of readiness that I knew I didn't have. Because we had just had our first two children, and I had been in full-time grad school and full-time work and prison ministry and serving full-time at my church. So I had been burning the candle on two ends for too long. And because of that, it became more and more clear to me that something needed to change. So what did I do? Did I put away falsehood and tell the truth? No, I didn't. I took a less biblical approach that's called fake it until you make it. And I got worse and worse, and my heart became more and more callous, and I'd lash out at my family because I needed to control them. I needed them to be a certain way. I'd lie to others about how I was really doing because I needed them to think well of me, right? And I would fake it, and I would fake it, and I would fake it. Why? Because my deceitful desire said that I needed others to think well of me. My deceitful desires thought, well, I would somehow be letting God down if I told the truth, right? He called us to this, right? An admission of weakness and failure and a need for a change just seemed devastating to my pride and to my desires for success and my desires to be seen a certain way by others. People couldn't know what was really going on. I couldn't be real with them. So I projected something false, and my heart hardened to the point where I truly believed it would be better for me to die than to continue to live. Why? Because I believed that I had to keep going. I had to succeed. Failure was not an option, and I felt completely stuck. And these deceitful desires of power and control and comfort and the approval of others, I thought I had no options. Yet God, by his grace, finally broke in and showed me it's all a lie. You're just projecting something false. I've only asked you to do one thing right now. Just be honest. Stop projecting who you think everyone else wants you to be. Just be you and tell them where you're really at. I never asked you to be good enough. I never told you you had to succeed in this mission. I just told you you had to say yes. He wasn't asking me to be a thought of highly by others. He was asking me to put away falsehood and speak the truth. But I thought I have to be this way, and I have to be an awesome husband, and I have to be a great father, and I have to make this thing work. And God's grace broke in and said, you don't have to do any of those things. And listen, you might feel stuck in your situation right now because you've got all these expectations and you're projecting something that's false when you're really hurting and something's really going on and you really just need to be honest. And God's telling you, listen, you don't have to be those things. Realize that your life could end today and you could no longer be that husband, you could no longer be that father, you would not be a successful missionary, but you would be with me and I would continue to run and control the world without you. That was the most freeing truths I've ever experienced in my life. The man, I don't have to. I can be real and say where I'm really at. And now I'm thankful in God's grace and allowing me to be real and where I'm really at and getting the help that I need. I don't have to be your pastor, but I get to. Listen, you don't have to be a father. You can run away, but you get to. You don't have to be a spouse, but you get to. But the only way you stay there without the calluses is to speak the truth. Is to be real with where you're really at and set, or you've got to set aside the lies. And really, I think the best question to kind of sum it up is there anywhere that you feel stuck? Is there anything in your life that you feel like I have to be this at all costs? Even though it's killing me and it's dragging me down and it's sucking the life out of me. Because so-and-so expects me to be that way, or I've just been this way for so long, or this is how everyone knows me, and God is saying, listen, you don't have to. You put away that falsehood and speak the truth, and you let me take care of the rest. Let's pray.